Welcome to Career Tools. This week, DISC and presentation downfalls, high eyes. The questions this cast answers are, what are high eyes likely to forget when presenting? And how do high eyes increase effectiveness when presenting?
Folks, if you haven't already taken the new MT DISC, I encourage you to do so. You may have taken a Wiley DISC from us in the years past. We used Wiley for many, many years and have finally built our own instrument and validated it fairly extensively. And as we have been saying to people, it's simpler, it's smarter, and it's cheaper. And the cheaper part is really good. I think Wiley now is about $80 and ours is $30. And the output document you'll get will be much more detailed about things you can do behaviorally, much like we're talking about in this cast, to help you be more effective working with all kinds of people from all kinds of places.
This is part of a series we're doing about DISC and presentations. For each of the styles, we're going to tell you what it is that your style is most likely to get wrong in a presentation. And each of the DISC profiles has their own strengths and weaknesses, and they bring that to presenting. And there isn't really a best profile for presenting or any other task, but high eyes find presenting easiest. They find it most fun, which is not to say that they're the most effective. And even though every profile brings weaknesses to a presentation, any of us can behave any way we want when we think about it first. So for high eyes, that means more preparation and structure before the presentation. And presentations come in a variety of types. We can have motivational and educational and briefings and instructive and problem solving. And this guidance focuses on the most common of business presentations, the ones where you have to persuade someone to agree to your proposal.
That's right. Our outline for today is, as Wendy mentioned, it's a simple outline. We've got consider your audience, prepare, structure your presentation, and rehearse.
Things that high eyes love to do. Okay, so the first one is consider your audience. And this is not an instruction for high eyes in particular. It's actually an instruction for anybody who's doing a presentation, no matter what your DISC profile is. Should we do what DISC is before we go on?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so DISC is a personality profile. No, not a personality profile, a behavioral profile.
Yes. DISC is a behavioral communication profiling assessment, right? And so you get basically four quadrants that we think of visually. If you could picture a circle with four quadrants, and basically two hemispheres, you've got on top, you've got your high D's and high I's. Those are more assertive profiles. On the bottom, you've got your high S's and high C's. Those are more reserved profiles. On the left are your high D's and high C's. Those are your more task-focused profiles. And on the right, you've got high I's and high S's. Those are your more people-focused profiles. And so where people fall in each of those quadrants dictates, of course, a letter, right? Mm-hmm. High D, high I, high S, or high C, but also their natural tendencies in terms of communicating. So high I's that we're talking about here are assertive and people-focused.
And probably if you're listening to this, you already knew that you were a high I. If you didn't, welcome to the high I dome. Andrew is in that category with you.
Yeah.
And to go back to your audience, you might have heard us say this once or twice before, that communication is what the listener does. So it's sending information in a manner that makes sense to the listener is how you make it easiest to understand for them. And as a high I, you like to communicate using stories. Your idea of evidence is a conversation that you had with your supplier or a customer or a friend in the industry. That's evidence for a new product or evidence that your proposal should be accepted. The other profiles don't think like that.
No.
High C's think that evidence is only hard numbers and preferably to at least two decimal places.
And Wendy, you can see high I's in a lot of different industries and people. We don't want to generalize that certain profiles gravitate towards certain roles, but they do. I mean, they, you know, high D's like being in roles where they can tell people what to do, and high C's like being in roles where they don't have to interact with as many people as other profiles. And high I's find themselves or gravitate towards positions where they work with other people or where they get to interact with other people. And so we see this in, of course, you know, sales, marketing, that type of stuff, but politics. We see a lot of high I's in politics.
And TV and films.
Yeah. And I've noticed, at least, I don't know, over the last 5 years or so, and maybe it was, maybe it happened before this and I just wasn't paying attention, but I've noticed a lot of politicians, right or left, doesn't matter, they use to make their argument or to make their case, they use an anecdote, a specific person, a specific situation.
I met Joe in this city on my tour last month.
I want to talk to you about Joe who has, you know, who lost his job and is now doing this, right? I mean, it's from a high I standpoint, it's trying to build that connection, evoke emotion, right? Which is a people thing. Emotions mm-hmm. are people things. Computers don't have emotions, right? And so that's kind of an example of how an anecdote is not data. And so if you're telling that story, but your audience is more reserved and task focused or high C's, the message is not going to land.
They don't get it. They've just instantly dismissed it because it's like one story from one guy. How does that persuade anybody?
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't matter how charming you are. It's just not going to work.
No.
It's not only the disc profile that you want to consider for your audience, unless you have an entirely homogenous, can't say that word, homogenous audience with only one disc profile represented.
That never happens.
Can you imagine a room full of high C's? Just high C's, that'd be so bad. So you can't cater to just people's disc profiles. So keep that in mind, but also consider the other attributes of the audience. So for example, how many people are you presenting to? Because that dictates how much interactivity you could expect or plan for.
Yeah.
How much specific knowledge does the audience have? So that dictates the level of detail that you can expect your audience to understand. How much general knowledge does the audience have? Because that dictates how much time you need to spend on the background.
Yeah, building your case absolutely. Why does the audience believe that they're attending this presentation? That's another one. That dictates how much time you'll need to spend directing their attention where it needs to be. What else is this audience doing on this day? An audience who, we've had this, I'll get a client, you know, ECC, where we're going to be covering DISC and we're going to cover communication and behaviors. And it's a 4.5 hour virtual session. There's a break for those of you that are thinking about joining and now said, no way, I'm not going to do it. There is a break. Okay. But I found out once, right after we started the session, we were doing introductions. The group kind of seemed like there were people rolling in a little late. Maybe people were, a few people didn't have their cameras on. And it was just not typical for this client that we had worked with several times. And they said, oh, we just got out of an all hands meeting that we were in for 2 hours. So people are, of course, okay, that makes sense, mm-hmm. right? People need bio breaks. People have their cameras off because they're grabbing a snack because they need nourishment, right? You got to consider, if you can and if you know, what else that your audience is doing that day. So our next point here is prepare. Start your preparations at least twice as long before the presentation as feels reasonable to you. Us high eyes, we are notorious for saying, it's okay, I'll just wing it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know how to do this. I know the stuff, right? It'll be fine. And I know people, right? I'll be able to read the room. And the problem is that you likely, if that's what you're telling yourself, it's probably because you've been successful that way, right? You've been able to, or at least you think you've been successful that way. And so kind of flying by the seat of your pants and ad-libbing and throwing things together, you take that to be evidence that your way works. I happen to be a weird high I, high C combo. So I like preparing, but high I's, other high I's that I interact with constantly tell me if I prepared, it wouldn't be as good as if I flew off the baloney. That is the biggest excuse for not having to prepare that I've ever heard.
Yeah. And the thing is, you've never tried it the other way. So you have no proof whatsoever.
Yeah, exactly. The bottom line is things that you've prepared, rehearsed, you know, when you've said words out loud and you go, ooh, that sounded good. Mm-hmm. I got to remember that's how I want to say that.
Or you say words out loud and discover you can't pronounce them and wonder why you put them in podcasts.
Yeah, that happens too.
Yeah.
So the bottom line is just try it this way once. Okay. Write us afterwards. Let us know that your way works better. Happy to take those customer service emails. But preparation gives you the time and the space to consider what's going to work best rather than using whatever comes to your mind in the moment. Preparation gives you the time to have the charts and the graphics that support your point and have them, you know, proofread by someone who maybe, in the audience or maybe, you know, of the same kind of demographic or group that's in the audience, same team. Preparation gives you the time to have those binders printed so that you have something that's nice and presentable and professional and maybe even fancy to give to people. Presentation gives you the time to structure your thoughts so that others can follow them logically, so that they make sense. And again, that's tough for high eyes because
high eyes like to go off on tangents.
We go all over the place and we say to ourselves, you know, all the water's going to end up in the ocean, yeah. Right? We're all going to get there.
And people are going to enjoy them.
Yeah, sometimes we need a few stories, mix it up, you know? We can't just get to the end. Otherwise, we'd only be here for a half an hour. We need to be here with all these people for 2 hours. So yeah, the preparation is what helps. It also means that you have a better idea of how long it's going to take to get through your material, to get from one slide to the next. How much time am I going to spend on this one slide? Does that mean maybe I need two slides, right? Whatever, right? There are parts where, you know, you'll have to cut time and you'll have to, you know, and ideally, you know that ahead of time. So you're not cutting out the parts that you know are important. I know when I present a full day EMC, I love talking about feedback and I can get a little long on feedback. So mm-hmm. I know where I need to, you know, I really know that agenda well so that I know, hey, if I happen to go long, this is what's going to happen. Or if we get through one-on-ones, which is the first part of the agenda, and I don't have a lot of questions, people seem to be on board, they're doing one-on-ones already, I know, good, more time for feedback,
yes.
Right? But I don't know that if I have not done this stuff over and over and over again to understand where my pitfalls are, where my points that usually prompt questions mm-hmm. arise, right? So, yeah.
The presentations that you're most impressed by are the ones where so much work went in beforehand.
You may not even know
how
exactly. much work has gone into those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. We've already covered considering the audience, but here's some more things to think about when you're beginning to prepare. How long do you have? Where will you be presenting? What facilities and equipment will you have available? What information do you need from others to create your presentation?
Mm-hmm.
What do you want to have created or printed before the presentation? Things that take time, it helps if you think about those things ahead of time.
Things that could potentially also take away from the presentation or mm-hmm. distract from the material in the moment.
I was doing some research on something the other day. Completely random, it doesn't matter what it was, but there was a whole bunch of people that were charging $3,000-$5,000 a day for their services, and they had spelling mistakes on their websites.
And
every time I saw it, I was we probably have spelling mistakes on ours, to be fair.
Oh yeah, for sure.
It's really easily done, but when it's on the homepage and it's really big and it's like mm-hmm. the big writing, you just think, are you really worth $5,000? It's the little things that people notice.
Well, and we talk about this when we talk about resumes, mm-hmm. right? I mean, if the first sentence on your resume is detail-oriented professional looking
yes.
for, and we don't recommend that, but if that's what is on your resume, and then you have grammar or spelling or syntax errors, you know, in the next few sentences, I mean, you might as well have handed your resume to somebody and said, here, can you throw this away for me? Because I can't. I don't want to.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, yeah.
Folks, if you're listening to this cast, if you've taken MT Disc, the next step is to come to an effective communicator conference. The design of the conference is, we've won awards for it. It's very, very hard to teach people how to change their communication skills, how they behave when they're communicating without having them practice. So, oh boy, is there a lot of practice. We'll have you practice how to observe other people for facial expressions and body language. You'll be shocked by how good you'll become at it, how quickly you'll do so, and how to analyze other people's behaviors to understand rather than judge. And then how to make small adjustments in your own behaviors so you can tailor your delivery to someone else. Single most important thing I ever learned in my professional career about interpersonal tactics. I hope you come to the website and sign up.
Now we've thought about a little bit about how we're going to do this presentation. The next thing is about structuring the content of your presentation.
Yeah, a presentation is easier to follow, which makes it more persuasive. That's what we're focusing on here. If it's structured well, like your best jokes, and I love jokes, a presentation needs a beginning, a middle, and an end. You can't just jump to the punchline, mm-hmm. right? You've got to set it up. You've got to have a premise, right? You've got to work your way towards it. And jokes work best when they have like a surprise or a twist punchline at the end. That's not what we're talking about here. We want a presentation to follow a logical progression, right? And not necessarily have a plot twist at the end. Yeah. We don't want to give a 50-minute presentation about about why we should do X and then say, but really we should do Y right at the end.
Oh, I just want to go to that presentation.
So we want it to be logical. We want it to make sense. We want the conclusion to make sense to the audience. So think of it like a funnel. You want all of the structure in your presentation to channel the audience to the point you want to get them to condense, you know, to start from the macro and then kind of condense down to that single point of decision or persuasion.
And the first question to ask yourself when you're preparing the content is, what is the purpose of this presentation? And even if it's just your boss's weekly meeting, you can have different purposes for the same briefing each week. So in one week, your purpose might be to help your peers understand the customer mix. In the next week, it's to help them understand that sales are high and you see a potential bottleneck in a couple of months. You might be trying to persuade your boss to hire another salesman, in which case you might have the same purpose for a couple of weeks in a row, like showing the numbers of sales lost because of missed phone calls, for example. So you need to know what the purpose is so you know what to emphasize, what to include, and what to leave out.
Yeah, once you know your purpose, you can craft your opening statement to support that purpose. The maxim, tell them what you're going to tell them, and then tell them what you told them, is a cliche for presentation structure because it works. An opening statement might sound like, sales are up, and we have reasons to be optimistic about the next 6 months. It could be, sales of our new product are higher than expected, necessitating further equipment purchases. It could be, customers report issues with the new module. I'm concerned about our technical response. Your major points in the body of the presentation will then break down and support that opening statement. For example, sales are up and we have reasons to be optimistic about the next 6 months. All right, sales are up 5% year over year and 10% quarter over quarter. Maybe nice to have a chart there to illustrate that. Mm-hmm. Reasons to be optimistic. 60% of customers return to us to make a repeat purchase. Total growth in the industry is 7%. The reduction in interest rates will encourage building.
Basically, we've taken the opening sentence, the opening statement, and we've broken it down into component parts. And then we've given some evidence for each of those component parts. And none of those are stories. They're all facts.
Yep.
In the mind of high seas. They are things that can be verified. Mm-hmm. Things that are happening to more than one person. Things that can have numbers that represent them.
Yeah. And you high eyes. They kind of tell a story, if mm-hmm. that makes you feel better,
yes.
right?
And you can tell a story if 60% of customers return to us to make a repeat purchase. It's one of your points. And you have enough time, you can tell a story about a specific customer because some of the people in your audience are high I's and they will appreciate it. And high S's will probably appreciate it too. What we're trying to do in these casts is to show you the thing that you're not going to do. So you will naturally add a story. You will not naturally add numbers.
Absolutely. So finally, you'll need a conclusion. It could sound like this. I hope you can see why I'm optimistic and you agree with me. As you can see, the sales of our new product at 10% above predicted will necessitate the purchase of 3 new machines if we're to keep the lead times the same. Could also be the customer issues are serious and I believe necessary changes, The customer issues are serious and I believe they necessitate changes in our technical response as I've outlined.
So we should keep that in. Keep that in. We'll keep in Andrew stuttering over necessitate because the next point is rehearse. And one of the reasons we rehearse is we find those words that we can't say. Even if it's just your weekly meeting and it's a client and you know the name of the client, but every time you go to say it, you say it with the wrong emphasis or you say the vowel in the wrong way. We have lots of clients and some of them have some very odd names.
Yeah.
If you say the word out loud, you discover that it's a difficult word for you. Or I need to write down the customer name in phonetics, you know, how I would say it, because for some reason it doesn't twig with me.
Yeah, there's nothing in the name of this client that says that should be a long vowel. Mm-hmm. But it is. And I just always want to say it.
Laticrete or Laticrete?
Oh, yeah, it's Laticrete. Yeah. I was also thinking of... We have Publicis,
yes.
Publicis Sapient, and it's Publicis.
Yes. It doesn't say that on there.
No, it doesn't say it. And I've had several sessions with them where I've said Publicis. And then they were like, well, Andrew, you know, it's actually Publicis, but you could probably just, everyone else internally says PS. And I go, oh, well, that's really helpful.
Yes, I can say PS. Yeah.
Yeah, I can say PS.
Sometimes it's writing down that word in a way that it makes sense to you, right? So you might write P-O-O dash rather than P-U, just because that's how you would pronounce those letters.
Yeah. I'll give one other quick thing in terms of preparation. When we get rosters of who's going to be in sessions as presenters, if there's a name that we're not sure on how to pronounce, maybe it's from, you know, maybe it's an overseas client or maybe it's just a name we've never seen before, we look it up. We go, you know, try to see if there's a common pronunciation so that when we are doing introductions, we don't butcher someone's name. Now, we still are going to sometimes, but we try to do that extra little step of preparation.
I like that. I'm going to a Toastmasters contest tonight. It's contest season for anyone who's not a Toastmaster. Ooh. It finishes around now, and the winners of the contests that are happening now will go up to the world champion. And they're really good. But one of the things that we do during the contestant briefing is we ask them to pronounce their name and say their speech title so that the person introducing them hears them say their name the way they want it said and hears the speech title the way they want it said. Because sometimes you've got like 3 or 4 words and there's an emphasis on one of them and that changes the meaning. And so if the Toastmaster introduces with the wrong emphasis, your speech doesn't make sense with the title. So there's a reason that that's baked in there. It's because people have made mistakes before. So there's another one. So the more important the presentation is, the more important rehearsal is to increase your effectiveness.
Absolutely.
And you high eyes are most likely stopped listening 20 minutes ago. I don't know who we're talking to. but for those of you who stuck it out, it's your tendency to wing it that reduces your effectiveness much more often than you think. The first time you properly prepare and structure your presentation, it'll be a lot of work, but we promise the slam dunk you get at the end will be worth it.
That's right.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Wendy. Bye, everyone.
That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with a new topic.